Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Money and Markets. This is Catherine Austin Fitz and John Titus. We're recording on Wednesday the 18th for publication on Thursday the 19th. And our theme, John?
23 large control grids and limited hangouts. 23 right, referring to the year.
Every day it's an accumulation of more investment in a bigger control grid and more modified. It's like a competition between two to see which tsunami. It's like two tsunamis at each other.
Right.
Unbelievable.
But everything is over the top right now.
But we're going to start with the the most over the top we have ever seen.
Yeah, this is unbelievable. I think you sent me a clip.
I sent you Miss Ukraine.
Miss Ukraine. So, I was like, but I already had a clip of Miss USA, so I was like, we got to do this on Money and Markets.
Did we ever think that Catherine and John would present a beauty pageant on Money and Markets? Well, anything's possible in 2023.
Yeah, you guys just watch this. We're going to start with Miss Ukraine.
Okay.
And I have to ease subscribers into Miss USA, but let's do Miss Ukraine first.
Yeah, but this is January 14th, not that long ago, last week, at the Miss Universe Beauty Pageant in Miami Beach, Florida.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Let's just watch this. Here's Miss Ukraine. There she is. Okay, here we go.
Ukraine! This Warrior of Light costume symbolizes Ukraine's fight for freedom. The Warrior of Light protects her country like Archangel Michael, who is a guardian of soldiers and considered to be the patron of Kyiv, the capital city. This Warrior of Light will help in their fight, Ukraine.
So the cameraman there seemed to like the helmets on the wingtips better than, or the wing joints, better than he liked the contestant. We got a lot of that.
Right. It does look very Prussian, that helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. It was amazing, like a Nazi battle helmet, war helmet. Anyway.
Well, the other thing is if you love, because Archangel Michael is a very important angel in the hierarchy and in prayer is very important. If for someone like me, the sacrilegious nature of that is just, it's hard to express how unaligned that is with Archangel Michael.
Right, right. It would be a jab in the eye of, say, a Christian country, like, for example, Russia.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so now let's cut this. So that's pretty over the top. Like the wings coming out, the robotic wings, the helmet, the huge feathers, everything. That's pretty crazy. That's like by itself would have been the most over the top costume I'd ever seen in a Miss USA or any beauty pageant. But the problem was I had already seen Miss USA. So let's look at this. I'm going to have to reveal this slowly to your subscribers. I can't show it all at once because it's too much. So let's cut over. I've actually masked out the contestant here, and I'm going to reveal her in two stages. One, there we go. There's the moon there, and then there's the contestant, and here she goes. Let's watch this.
USA! When Americans stepped on the moon in 1969, it was one small step for man. Today, women are more involved as leaders in returning the U.S. to the moon. This delegate is representing NASA's Johnson Space Center in her hometown of Houston. Pretty soon, she'll be on the moon, USA.
Yeah, so you see the moon shot there. It's the moon up top and then her own moon. Isn't that great? Real good for
That's
the kids.
That's unbelievable. Now, I should point out she won the contest. She is now the new Miss Universe.
Awesome.
And my thinking was she won it for not falling down. That was the...
Yeah. One of the Twitter comments on that costume was, would it have killed her to put knee tambourines on that costume?
Well, if you watch her walk out, you know, I can't believe she didn't fall. It looks like
she's going to tip over.
Yeah.
She's going to capsize on stage. Right?
But I kept trying to understand what the message was and talk to people about. I mean, the thing that I have a hard time with is that somebody thought this was a good idea.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. Yeah. But the other thing is, you know, you were talking about the Russian contestant and that she looked beautiful in a beautiful dress.
That's very traditional, long gown.
These people look like freaks.
Yeah. Right. It's the transhumanist movement. Like they're half human, part robot too, you know?
Well, but is the message that we can make these people do anything we want?
I don't know.
I don't know. I keep trying to derive meaning from it, and I'm struggling.
Yeah, I wouldn't lose sleep over that one. Chasing that pursuit.
But somebody thought this was a good idea, and the question is, why?
It costs a lot. I think that costume. Now we know where the money in the Ukraine's going. That costume.
It's going to the moon.
The costume was $1.3 billion, Catherine. Come on.
Okay, Sean.
All right, let's get into the theme, starting with Limited Hangouts. This first from Consent Fact. This is C.G. Hopkins, and he's talking about, this is called The Mother of All Limited Hangouts. And let's just get into it. He says, The Mother of All Limited Hangouts has begun. Yes, I'm talking about the COVID Twitter files. He says, okay, so what is a limited hangout? You get caught doing something like the CIA has been caught. So how do you deal with getting caught, you know, manipulating the media? Well, what you do is, CJ says, you release a limited part of the story. That is the story of whatever it is you got caught doing to distract people's attention from the rest of the story. The part you release is the limited hangout. And he says, what they're hiding here in the Twitter files is the whole story. The whole story is in March and April 2020, a global shock and awe campaign was conducted. Constitutional rights were suspended. The mass lockdown inside their homes, where they're subjective to the most massive official propaganda blitzkrieg in human history. Goon squads roamed the streets of Europe, the USA, the UK, Canada, Australia, Asia, the Americas, and elsewhere, beating and arresting people for being outdoors without permission and not wearing medical-looking masks. And so we have now the whole story really is, it's a story of radical restructuring of society based on lies and propaganda executed globally through sheer brute force and systematic psychological conditioning. He says now, rather than getting that whole story, what we're getting instead with the Twitter files is the Alex Berenson show. And CJ says, in his opinion, the events of the last 3 years weren't due to the whole totalitarian rollout. It was simply due to mass hysteria. And certainly not to any kind of coordinated radical restructuring of society by the global capitalist power apparatus. What actually happened, according to Berenson, was that people just went kind of crazy. They overreacted and mistakes were made. Mistakes like Twitter suspending Alex Berenson. And he says the Alex Berenson show is just getting started. And right. I think he's right about that.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really funny because I was just talking to a group who are headed to a conference in Stockholm. And I was talking about, look, we now know we're dealing with a mass atrocity. It was engineered. It was intentional. The proof that it's an atrocity is the fact that once you knew this was killing people and the injection wasn't safe and effective, they wouldn't stop. They kept pushing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we know that the goal, whatever the goal is, the goal was not for the injection to be safe and effective or protected. I mean, that's proven again and again. So the question now is, okay, who's accountable and how do you hold them accountable? Because if you decide you're not going to hold them accountable, you need to be clear about that. There needs to be clarity among the gathered group about, are we going to hold people accountable? Who do we hold accountable and how do we do it? And if you're not going to do it, if you're just going to slide over it inside a limited hangout, you need to be clear about that. And if you look at a lot of the limited hangouts, they're trying to stop that conversation from happening about who's accountable and how do we hold them accountable.
Right. And they don't like the conversation of, hey, this looks really, really deliberate to me. This whole thing was rolled out. It was globally coordinated from the top. And to me, in real time, I knew it was rolled out deliberately. It was a pre-planned event. Just by going into the grocery store and seeing those 6-foot space signs on the floor, like how many millions of those were printed? Where were they sitting? What warehouses were they sitting in? You can't just print up that many signs willy-nilly. Right. Those are big signs, and it takes a lot of time and effort and money to print them up. And they were ready to go all across the U.S. So don't tell me this is some sort of spontaneous thing. We're just kind of rallied, got the printers. No, BS.
Right.
This thing was done in advance, well in advance.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course. So,
but the people rolling with the limited hangout are like, oh, no, it's just what a crazy time. It's like, no, it's not, except it wasn't crazy. Those signs were made in advance, and don't tell me they weren't.
I told you, the guys who I would occasionally talk to who did covert operations, they would get really frustrated because they'd say, can you believe these people think this is a natural event? Do you know how much work this took?
Yeah.
They would feel deeply underappreciated.
Right. You know, the media had all the talking points from the very beginning, and they never deviated from those talking points. Sort of like 9/11. You know, like you had these people miraculously appearing up on the scene at the time going, yeah, the building just pancaked down one floor by another, pancake all the way down. And it's like, who manufactures these talking points?
My favorite one was the guy in the UK who won his lawsuit because he didn't want to pay the BBC fee. And his argument was because they announced the collapse of Building 7 20 minutes before it collapsed. That was my favorite.
That was me too. That's the giveaway. You know, it was the Salomon Brothers building. Yeah. Right.
So the thing about the limited hangouts, you know, I was talking with you yesterday about the fact so much money is being poured in budget increases into CDC, FDA. If you look at everybody who's accountable, they're getting big raises.
Really?
Yeah, they're getting so they're getting big raises, and there's a huge amount of money and effort being poured into building up biodefense. Meantime, I'm hearing everybody say, well, it's over. Well, it's not over. If the guys who did the last one are getting big budget increases and working hard on creating 1,000 new rules that make it more effective next time, what do you think that's about?
Right. And not to mention last week we saw one of those globalist meetings getting together saying, oh, it's a polycrisis world.
Oh, right. Like I forgot.
Like
yes.
That's how we're going to run things from now on.
The creepy people have gathered. Right.
Yeah. It's polycrisis. So get used to, it's whatever crisis we, pull out of our, and throw at you, you're going to have to go along with it. That's the official narrative. And don't you ever question it.
I haven't watched very closely what's going on, but they strike me as being a group of people who are rather scared.
They're scared and they're not particularly bright, I've noticed. And you can't be, because the stories get so ridiculous that you need somebody with a kind of a lower IQ like Justin Trudeau or Jacinda Ahern. Their people aren't that bright. They're good at reciting talking points. They're good at parroting what their handlers tell them. But on their toes, they're not good.
Yeah, but, the people behind the scenes that I used to deal with, I haven't dealt with them for a long time. They were smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were smart.
I don't doubt that. Yeah. Right. I don't doubt that. But the people, I'm talking about the face people, the front people.
Anybody with a Victor the Cleaner smile is not that smart.
Right.
If they were, they would have gotten out of that position a long time ago.
They would have. You got it.
Right.
You got it. They would have gotten out of the line of fire a long time ago.
Right.
Anyway, I think that CJ piece is really good. I think it's right on the money.
It's very good. CJ is a very smart man.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that. There's a lot of limited hangouts going on, to be sure.
Right,
Just because someone occupies a space in so-called alternative media, don't take necessarily what they say at face value. Think through and ask yourself why they're being promoted.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. Let's turn to FedWatch, shall we?
Yes.
This next one, this is kind of a big story here. This is from Reuters. Yellen warns of U.S. default risk by early June, urges debt limit hike. The Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, said on Friday that the United States will likely hit the $31.4 trillion statutory debt limit on January 19th. So the Treasury is going to have to really manage its cash tightly. Once the limit is reached, she says, Treasury will need to start taking certain extraordinary measures to prevent the United States from defaulting on its obligations. Failure to meet government's obligations would cause irreparable harm to the U.S. economy, the livelihoods of all Americans, and global financial stability, she wrote. Republicans, now with a slim new majority in the House of Representatives, are keen to demand spending reductions. Well, that's exactly what she's alluding to.
So there's another possibility, and that is Treasury just issue money.
Yeah, yeah.
The Fed's in other words, we don't need a debt-based system. The Treasury can just issue the currency. We don't need the Fed.
But you can issue quarters. Why don't you issue $250,000 bills, you know?
Right. Well, there was one debate where somebody wanted to do the $1 trillion coin.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you know, we have the authority and the power to issue money without debt.
Yeah,
and
right.
So the only reason we have $31 trillion, I mean, when we had $21 trillion of debt, there was $21 trillion missing from the U.S. accounts.
Yeah, right, right.
Now, one of the problems we have issuing currency is we don't have a sovereign bank, right?
We have a bank that's owned by its own privately.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the problem. Why are you borrowing your money into existence?
Exactly.
You know, at another time of crisis, the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln told the bankers, listen, I'm not borrowing. They're like, hey, we'll lend you money. And we know you need money. What do you think of a 24 to 36% interest rate? And Lincoln's like, absolutely not. The Treasury can print money. We'll just print out greenbacks, which is what he did. Interest-free.
Right.
It's been done before.
Right.
You know, just dump
these
guys.
The presidents who've done it have a habit of getting shot at.
They do have a habit of.
Had Lincoln, he got shot at. You have Jackson, he got shot at and lived. And Kennedy was about to do it and he got shot. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's actually a couple more in there. But the details aren't at the tip of my tongue, so I'm going to lay off. Anyway.
Well, there's a reason the Secret Service reports to the Secretary of the Treasury.
Yeah, right, right. Okay, let's keep it going in FedWatch. This next story is interesting to the precious metals crowd. What is JP Morgan doing? JP Morgan may move into precious metals clearing in Zurich. JP Morgan Chase is looking to start clearing precious metals trades in Zurich, something that for years has been dominated just by two Swiss banks. And the Swiss banks they are talking about, let me get back over here. The Swiss banks they are talking about are UBS and Credit Suisse. JP Morgan is the world's dominant bullion bank with business spanning everything from trading futures to hedge funds. Its vaults also help underpin trading in London and New York, the two biggest markets. And that's really all the detail that's given in this. Basically, JP Morgan's
moving into the space. So my big question is this because a lot of the gold trade is moving east? And London is not going to do it for them. They need Zurich too.
That's one explanation. Another explanation might be JP Morgan, like a lot of banks, may be in a little trouble now, and they're looking to get into any corner of a market where they can make a little bit of money. I don't think the banks are really healthy right now.
Well, I don't think they're healthy, but I think you have a lot of clients at JP Morgan Chase who want to have gold not in London or New York.
It could be a lot of reasons behind this. But it's significant.
Yes, it's very significant.
That they've laid off on this and now suddenly maybe they didn't were such a fan of gold, now they're just changing their tune like, "Oh, well, now we're interested."
Right.
But you know what's up? What's up? Something's going on.
Something is going on. I want to hear any subscriber's got a thought about what this is about. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm going to get to the bottom of this one. It may take some time, but I'll get to the bottom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Keep us up to date. I mean, JP Morgan, that's a savvy bank and that's a connected bank. I don't have to tell you that. You know.
Well, but they're correspondent to so many banks and countries around the world. They've got a control position in and out of so many countries. Now, we talked about the markets, you know, we're watching a tear in the fabric of the markets between East and West, you know, in the energy markets and in the financial markets. And all of a sudden, JP Morgan Chase is not satisfied with London and New York. They want a clearing operation for bullion in Zurich. That's interesting.
It is. It is. I'm kind of at a loss to explain. Like, what's
well, that's
up
okay.
There.
We'll figure it out. We'll
find
out.
A number of explanations. Anyway, right. I attach a lot more significance to that story than I do to the next one. Not that it's not significant. I just think the last one was more. This next story is Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia says it's open to settling trade in other currencies. Obviously, a big oil producer doing this is a big deal. And just to hone in on a key paragraph, the world's largest exporter, which has maintained a currency pegged to the dollar for decades, is seeking to strengthen its relations with crucial trade partners, including China, meaning they're going to trade, you know, oil and yuan.
Yeah.
Right. Stories like this kind of bug me because it's like they say it's a peg to the dollar, a currency peg to the dollar. It's like, really? I remember when gold was pegged to the dollar, the graph of gold at $35 an ounce looked like this. Okay.
Right.
It was flat.
Right.
It was $35. Right.
Right.
The oil price isn't pegged. It looks like this. Okay.
Right.
That's the oil price. So don't tell me it's pegged. It's not pegged at all. That's not what they mean.
But if you want to buy oil from Saudi Arabia, you got to go in and out of the dollar, and it gives the U.S. jurisdiction over that transaction.
That's
in the sanctions.
Right. And
so
it's
now
really
you're talking about, yeah. So
it's
now
a contractual
you're talking,
obligation.
Right. You're talking about finding a way to trade where the U.S. sanctions don't. One, it depends on how they do it, but one, the U.S. may not be able to see it. So that's an intelligence issue. And then two, they may not be able to control or stop it.
Or three, maybe Russia's shown us that your sanctions really aren't that impressive. They hurt, but they don't hurt that bad.
Right. Right. Well, the world has figured out that they would rather take a lot of inconvenience and figure out a way to trade without having to go through the dollar and give the dollar jurisdiction. Remember, if I hold in my bank account in Switzerland, if I hold a dollar in the bank, it's deemed to be at Citibank and under U.S. jurisdiction, even though it's my deposit in a Swiss bank. But because it's in dollars, the jurisdiction is in New York.
Well, it also means that it's sitting in a bank. The bank software can delete your dollar. So
right. Right.
Yeah. You know,
right.
So remember that part.
Right.
Ask Russia how that worked out for them. Right.
But they've been working since the financial crisis to build other channels. And one of the channels they all built is significant growth in their not only their bullion holdings, but their ability to swap nation to nation bullion without going through the US.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Or London.
I guess the significance of the story to me is, you know, it's yet another workaround exists to get around being tied to the dollar.
Right.
The next story, there's a lot of ways to read this next one. And there's really kind of back-to-back stories, both about Biden and the confidential documents, from the Wall Street Journal. First story, Biden aides discover additional classified documents at second location. Biden's aides have found additional classified documents in a second location beyond those discovered in November at a Washington office Mr. Biden used after his vice presidency. That's a key point in this story, is the documents we're talking about were classified at a time when he was vice president. Okay.
Right.
The vice president does not have declassification authority. Only the president has that, because ultimately it's an executive office decision, right?
Right.
So he's vice president. Anyway, let's cut back to the story. This additional discovery. The discovery of another set of classified documents will intensify the political pressure bearing down on the president as the Justice Department determines how to handle the case of Mr. Trump. Ms. Jean-Pierre said Mr. Biden's lawyers did the right thing by turning over the documents to the National Archives after they were discovered in November at the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement, the president's Washington-based think tank. Ms. Jean-Pierre also declined to say whether this is Jean-Pierre, his press secretary, also declined to say whether Mr. Biden used other offices in the period after he left the vice presidency. So that's story one. We got two locations for documents, classified documents being found. Do you have anything you want to add on that?
Well, the thing I find interesting about all of this is we now have multiple reports of classified documents being turned back by people who work for Biden. And yet the FBI and the Department of Justice has felt no need to do an independent search as law enforcement for classified documents in any of the Biden locations. And I find that odd.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Trump's attorneys weren't trusted to do anything, including manage, you know, the documents that he had appropriately, let alone turn anything in. You know, you get a surprise raid, but Biden's people keep turning over classified documents, which are clearly not supposed to be where they are.
Right.
Not supposed to be in the hands of, and law enforcement feels no need to independently take charge. I find that very odd.
That's odd. The other thing that's odd is the story thus far casts Biden attorneys kind of in the role of Boy Scouts. Like, hey, whoa, we found some classified documents. We better tell the National Archives about this. It's like Biden's not really an honest guy. And so the notion that his attorneys are going to do this and not simply destroy the documents, I find difficult to believe. But have it your way.
Something is unusual here.
Yeah, let's keep it going with the story. So now it's stepped up. Now we've got the Attorney General Merrick Garland names Robert Hur, special counsel, to investigate Biden documents, okay? Attorney General Merrick Garland on Thursday named Robert Hur, a former U.S. attorney during the Trump administration, as special counsel to examine why classified documents were found at President Biden's home and office, intensifying scrutiny of Mr. Biden's actions after he left the vice presidency in 2017. The National Archives Inspector General notified a Justice Department prosecutor on November 4th that documents with classified markings had been discovered at the center where they weren't authorized to be, Mr. Garland said, offering the fullest timeline yet of the discovery. The FBI on November 9th began assessing whether classified material had been mishandled in violation of federal law. And on the 14th, Garland asked U.S. Attorney in Chicago, John Lausch, with reviewing the documents. 5 weeks later, on December 20th, Mr. Biden's lawyers told Mr. Lausch that additional documents with classified markings dating to Mr. Biden's time in the Obama administration, in other words, as vice president, had been discovered in the garage of Mr. Biden's home in Wilmington, prompting the FBI to go there and retrieve them. And Thursday morning, Mr. Biden's lawyer told Mr. Lausch that an additional document bearing classification markings was identified at the president's home in Wilmington. These classified documents are going off like a popcorn popper.
So actually, it looks to me like somebody's trying to get rid of Biden.
Hey, it looks like somebody might be trying to set Biden off and get rid of him.
Right.
Or, so that's one way to read it. Another way to read it would be they've got him now. They got this guy dead to rights. We also know separately that your son is paying you $50,000 to rent a home where the classified documents were found. What is that $50,000 payment for, and why is it not showing up on your income tax returns?
Right,
those payments.
Right,
you're taking a depreciation for that home, but you're not claiming that as income. What's up?
Right, so they've got him on the taxes.
They've got this guy dead to rights. Biden
1,000 times over before this. They don't need this. The control file on Biden is bigger than the Webster's dictionary, right? So
yeah. Right.
He doesn't. They don't need a control file. They got a control file on him.
But what they've got on this on top of it is they get a 2-for-1 deal. They kick down Biden and Trump.
Yeah. You know? Right.
I think the case against Trump is a lot weaker. The case against Biden's a layup. Okay. They got
this
guy.
Well, his lawyers made sure it was a layup. So here's the question.
His own lawyers made sure it was a layup.
It was a layup. So how are they going to get rid of Harris? Because Harris is next. They're not going to get rid of Biden without getting rid of Harris.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
The other thing is maybe they don't get rid of Biden. Maybe they go to Biden and say something like, put U.S. troops in Ukraine. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they
– I'm assuming Biden would do whatever he's told.
He's going to do whatever he would have done whatever he's told anyway, which raises the third possibility. If they're not using it as leverage, are they using it as an excuse – to do whatever, like, hey, you know, we lost the war in Ukraine. That's Biden's fault.
Could be.
There's a lot of ways to read that story.
I mean, the whole Russian sanction Ukraine is not going as well as they'd hoped.
Yeah, it's not, right? They're running out. Hey, does anybody have any weapons we can give Ukraine? We're all out. We're down to M80s from the 4th of July party. That's not enough. Russians aren't responding.
So here's the thing. You're looking at a situation. There are 1,000 potential theories of what's going on, none of which are good.
That's a great point.
Okay. I can't come up with a theory.
Great point. Right.
of how this works out well.
Right. It's all good.
Right. Yeah. This is kind of the White House equivalent of the Miss Universe contest, right?
Right. It's just going bonkers.
Biden's lawyers just made sure he's walking around with a moon on his back.
Right. And we found some more documents in the tool shed. What are they doing? It gets more comical every iteration of the story. It's like,
Well, the other thing, I mean, I'd much rather impeach the guy for documents than for mass atrocity, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the last thing anybody wants to have is a real conversation.
How long does the story go on, I guess? What's the over-under? If I set the over-under on this story going away by July 4th, what are you taking? Are you taking the over or are you taking the under?
It's going to be gone by July 4th.
I'd take the under too.
Yeah.
Right.
It's going to be gone.
I got that. That's kind of my sense too.
Yeah. This story, I don't see this story lasting after March.
Because if that's right, if we're right about that, it's gone by March. That to me, that militates in favor of this is leverage. We want something from you.
Yeah. But who's you? Because it's not Biden. It's his whole crew.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's the whole crew. So the question is, who's the obstacle here and what do they want?
There's too many, like in algebra, if you have four variables you don't know what they are, you need four equations, right? You can't solve four variables with three equations. It's not going to work. The infinite number of solutions. Here, there's too many variables.
And well, one of the variables is not they're trying to hope, I mean, they're not trying to get the administration to do something that guarantees that the U.S. loses a major war.
Right.
Right.
Right. One of the variables, though, is Biden's senile. I mean, he's gone. How does that factor in? Anyway, it's a story to keep your eye on, though. It's a significant story. It's not an accident that the groundwork with Trump on the very same issue has already been laid.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Next story. Let's cut to still in Fed Watch. A very interesting story. Wall Street Journal, FAA grounds all domestic U.S. flights over system outage. I want you to look at the source of these stories. I'll kind of key in a couple of key paragraphs. The FAA early Wednesday ordered airlines to pause all domestic departures until 9 a.m. to allow agency to restore a critical system that alerts pilots and crew to safety advisories and other information for flights. Okay, the FAA ordered, FAA did that, did it? All right, who says that? Here's a quote. The FAA system that sends out important real-time flight hazards and restrictions to all commercial airline pilots is currently suffering a nationwide outage. It said, being United Airlines Holdings. United has temporarily delayed all domestic flights and will issue an update when we learn more from the FAA. The story also quotes a tweet from Southwest Airlines, and then it separately says American Airlines Group had said in a tweet the outage was affecting all carriers and all flights, but didn't provide details. I just find the sourcing of those very odd in that it's like, well, why aren't we hearing from the FAA? Why are we hearing from commercial airlines?
I don't know. The last time I looked, the lead IT contractor at the FAA, the lead contractor was Lockheed Martin.
Yeah. Right.
So, the question is which systems, who runs them, who's paid to run them? Who's really involved here?
If the journal story has any indication, it's almost like the FAA wasn't involved. We're getting all this information secondhand from the airlines.
Right, because they're having to tell people their flight's not going up. The right. FAA is being very quiet.
Okay. It's an odd story, and it gets weirder when I just want to cut to this.
Here's the thing. If you're the FAA, you don't say anything if you don't understand what's happening and why.
That's a great point.
Right.
If you're the government,
and because you can never look like you don't have control if you're the government.
Right.
So you would go to any length to – you would much rather people hate you than they understand that you don't have control.
Right, that you're not in control.
So you've got the FAA and their administrators. You've got the contractors who are running it, presumably Lockheed, maybe some others. And they don't understand what's going on. And they're trying to figure out what's going on. And the airlines have to say something because the planes aren't going to be taking off.
Yeah, and you don't want to put that person in front of the microphone and, you know,
right.
have it become
so
apparent.
So that's why they're not saying anything, because they right. don't know what's going on yet.
So that's why they're going through the airlines.
Right.
In that story. Okay. So we don't know what's going on. Okay. You want to see another? What's going on here? Let's cut to the chart. I'm going to cut to this chart. I saw this. It's like, you got to be kidding me. Okay. Here's a 3-month chart of Bitcoin. Okay.
Right.
It looks like a missing tooth. It's like a huge cavity where the tooth used to be right here. Okay.
Right.
The dip starts FTX. Okay. That's November 11th. And then the FAA grounds all flights and whoop, Bitcoin just miraculously goes exactly back to the level where it was before. Like, what is up with
that chart?
So
here's what's interesting. If you were going to do another pump of Bitcoin,
yeah.
you'd wait because the end of the year closes out that trading period, right? The year yeah. begins and you're ready to, you know, and so if you look at that chart, you start seeing it's called escalator up. You know, usually the markets trade escalator up, elevator down. So yeah. you see it start doing the escalator up and you think, well, maybe they're ready to pump it again. And then suddenly, elevator up. Now, you never see, you know, seeing an elevator up chart, that's a very strange thing.
Yeah.
You know, a company suddenly announces it's getting taken over, its stock, jumps 20 points. That's when you get an elevator up. It's something very unusual because we're talking about a jump up over 20,000. That's a big jump.
It's a huge jump.
It's a huge jump.
In other words, we said at the time of the FTX, it's not really – Bitcoin's not really in sympathy with FTX. It's kind of a –
Well, here's the thing. You know, there are all these rumors that the systems got hacked and they're bribing him using crypto.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know.
I don't know.
Here's the thing, this is what's happening this week, and you know I get back to our theme of 23 large. You look at Miss Universe and you think, I don't know. You look at J.P. Morgan Chase going to Zurich to trade, you know, leaving the Anglo-American Alliance behind. It's like,
right?
I don't know. And now you watch Bitcoin go like this, and you say, I don't know. But
after
somebody's doing a very
being hung
big
out
trade.
To dry. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
It's right.
Very, very curious. Okay. Let's keep it going. I want to cut to a global spyware scandal. There was a front line on PBS recently on what's called the Pegasus, the uh-huh. software that spies on people. So I just want to play a clip from this front line. It's kind of a funny clip, kind of not, but it just gives you an idea of what Frontline's talking about here. So let me run this clip.
The list doesn't have any names. You have phone numbers, area country code, some timestamps as well. And it's a list that is about 50,000 phone numbers from 2016 to 2020. We can't explain where the list is coming from. We can't, of course, reveal who is whole source. Officially, the Pegasus spyware is not working on any +1 US phone numbers. It's not possible.
The numbers, they are mostly in 10 countries, and most of these governments are known to be clients of NSO groups who make Pegasus.
Pegasus designed to infect phones like iPhones or Androids, and once in the phone, it can extract and access everything from the device. The phone books, geolocation, the messages, the photos. even the encrypted messages sent by Signal or WhatsApp. It can even access the mic or the camera of your phone remotely.
It's like a person over your shoulder, a person who will see what you are seeing, a person who will watch what you are watching, your emails, your encrypted communication, everything. So once you are infected, you're trapped.
Okay, so 50,000 journalists are being spied on. We don't know where the list of 50,000 numbers is coming from, but none of them's in the U.S. I wonder who would be behind that.
I was very glad to see this because, you know, long ago I used to write a lot and talk a lot about Promise and Main Core and some of the different techniques. I love the documentary about the Stuxnet virus. And I would try and help people see what I call it the data beast. And you would not see real serious corporate media effort to expose that, even after Snowden. So it was interesting that now suddenly this is coming along. So
yeah,
to me, it's a good thing. But
the other thing is, I jokingly say, I wonder who that could be. There's no U.S. numbers. Query how many Israeli numbers are in there. Because they're big on security software, are they not, and spying software, big time.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a major story. You're spying on all these journalists. Like, whoa.
Right.
And please, if you don't, the notion that they're not spying on U.S. journalists is risible.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Well, what was it Eric Schmidt said? There is no privacy. Get over it.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Right. If it's digital, it's not private. That's my attitude.
That's kind of my attitude too.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's open season if it's digital. Okay. Let's cut to the next story. Another hacking story, but a very interesting story from Reuters. SEC sues Covington law firm for names of 300 clients caught up in hack. Now, Covington and Burling represents all the too big to fail banks. It's in Washington, D.C. It's a power firm. Anyway, the SEC sues them, says, hey, tell us the names of your clients who got caught up in this hack. The SEC has sued law firm Covington & Burling for details about nearly 300 of the firm's clients whose information was accessed or stolen by hackers in a previously undisclosed cyber attack, court documents show. Hackers associated with Hafnium Cyber Espionage Group, which has alleged ties to the Chinese government, gained access to Covington's computer network around November of 2020, accessing private information about the firm's clients, including an odd number, 298 publicly traded companies, according to the lawsuit filed Tuesday by the SEC. The law firm told the SEC it is bound by attorney-client privilege and client confidentiality to resist the portion of the subpoena requiring it to name its clients. There were a few holes in that story, so I went on to Pacer and looked it up. Mm-hmm. I'm like, where's the 298 come from? And the thing they're leaving out of the story is that when Covington was first subpoenaed for these names, it was 300 companies. And Covington came back. Covington initially said, okay, we're going to comply with the subpoena by such and such a date. And by the time the date came and went, Covington changed his position and said, no, we're covered by attorney-client privilege. But two of those companies have agreed voluntarily to disclose their names, and that's how you get from the 300 to the 298.
Really?
The story doesn't. Yeah,
do we know who they were?
No, we don't know. It's not clear from the court. I accessed an affidavit that was attached to a motion to suppress or to quash the subpoena or whatever, and read it there. But the notion that the names of the clients are protected by attorney-client privilege is ridiculous. If you worked any time in a law firm that does any significant commercial litigation as an associate, you have done what's called attorney-client privilege logs, where you say, hey, we're withholding these documents. And on the log, you have to set forth enough information so the court can kind of look at the log and see, hey, does that really look like you have a valid grounds? And of course, so the things you put on the log are like who the memo came from, who it came to, the date of the memo, and the subject of the memo. So in other words, the name itself go onto the log. The notion that the names are covered by the attorney-client privilege is absolutely ridiculous. That's right. Just Covington.
So the SEC isn't asking for documents that are covered by attorney-client privilege. They're just asking for the names.
They reduced, yes, they pared back their request. They say, hey, just give us the names. And Covington balked. Covington said, no, we're not giving you the names. Covered by attorney-client privilege. Something's wrong with that story. Yep. Something's wrong with their theory. Their theory is garbage. It should be a slam dunk to order the disclosure of those names. That's a layup. They're not covered by attorney.
So
attorney-client privilege covers information that was yielded or given in connection with a client seeking
so the
advice
lawsuit
from
would
an
be in the third district. So who's the judge?
Well, it's in the District of D.C. Right.
Yes, yeah, it would be the third district.
The
court is federal court, right?
Yeah, but D.C. has its own district. There's a D.C. Court of Appeals.
Right.
The third you're talking about, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals is Philadelphia.
Well, the center or the headquarters for the third district is Philadelphia.
Right.
But the third district litigates in Washington, D.C.
No. The D.C. is its own.
No. I'm going to go find out. But I was in the third district, but I was litigating in a court in D.C.
A D.C. Court of Appeals and a D.C. Federal District
Court. No, it wasn't Court of Appeals. It was the initial court.
Well, if it's a district court, the district court's part of the D.C.
I'll
court.
Find out for next week.
Yeah, find out.
I'll find out.
So the candidates would be, it's either D.C., it's under the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, it's under the Third Circuit or the Fourth Circuit. Fourth Circuit being headquartered in Richmond. It's one of those, but I think it's in D.C.
So we had some in the local courts, but we were in the third district in the federal courts. But we were in a court in D.C.
Let's say this case goes up to appeal. It's going to the D.C. Court of Appeals. D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, not to the Third Circuit. But anyway,
I'll find out.
I'll look into it. Yeah.
Right.
Look into it. Okay. Next story in FedWatch. This is the last story in FedWatch. This is an interesting one. Let this be a lesson to you, laddie. Daily Mail. Our water tanks will be dry within days. Arizona City cuts off water to neighbors amid drought, and desperate residents demand water now and count down until dwindling supply runs out. Residents in Rio Verde foothills of Scottsdale, Arizona, are going to extreme and uncomfortable measures to procure water as they count the days until the supply runs out. The city officially stopped transporting water to the unincorporated neighboring area, and therein lies the problem. Unincorporated neighboring area, they don't get any water on the first day of the new year. The critical decision has left between 500 and 700 homes, roughly 1,000 people, many of whom operate businesses and send their children to school within Scottsdale city limits without a dependable source of water. So there you can see the map. Right. And there's Rio Verde out there to the east, okay? Residents of the area's many $500,000 McMansions, stucco homes, and ranches are desperately searching for a solution to the very serious problem. So this is, I take it, is the unincorporated neighborhood. And Scottsdale saying, hey, you know, we got a water shortage here, cutting you off.
So the reason I wanted to cover this story is to bring home the message that jurisdiction matters. Most people in the United States assume that municipal services will work and assume the economics of their local taxes will not change dramatically.
Right.
And they don't realize until it's too late that you need to do due diligence of a jurisdiction before you move in. You need to make sure the water and sewer, you need to make sure the enforcement, you need to make sure all the different municipal services are in good condition and the economics are not going to change radically in the foreseeable future. So you need to do your basic due diligence on the jurisdiction, both municipal and state. Jurisdiction matters, and you can't take these things for granted anymore, because you can buy a $1 million house and get it wiped out overnight if the water system stops working.
Yeah. Yeah, those weren't cheap. These aren't mobile homes we're talking about.
Right.
Those are expensive homes. They don't have water.
Right.
That's a big time mistake.
Right. But imagine suddenly your company moves you. You got to sell your house. You got to buy a new one. Where you're going, and you're in the middle of this.
Yeah, there's a lot more, a lot of nightmare scenarios you could spin out of not having water.
Right.
Yeah, it's not good.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Like I say, let that be a lesson to you. You know, jurisdiction does matter.
It does matter.
Okay, let's turn to CBDC and crypto. One story this week from the journal. Interesting. Central bank digital currencies are coming, whether countries are ready or not. There's really a not a lot in the story that's going to be new to subscribers, but they say CBDCs can roughly be divided into two types: those designed for use by financial institutions and those designed for use by the general public. So they're introducing the notion of retail and wholesale digital currency, which is interesting. I haven't seen that before. Some central banks are testing whether money transfers between financial institutions, which in some cases can take days to settle, I don't understand that, might be made safer and more efficient under a system in which centralized bank money is represented by digital tokens and transactions are settled on a shared distributed ledger, concepts borrowed from cryptocurrency and blockchains. One such system is being tested by New York Fed and a range of big U.S. banks and financial institutions. That's FedNow. We've talked about that here. The second type of CBDC, the retail, is a digital version of fiat money made available to the general public through accounts held by a central bank or a commercial bank. From the perspective of a regular person or business, this kind of CBDC isn't any different from the electronic money in their bank accounts today. It's just a digital dollar. What makes these kinds of CBDCs special is that they are created and held in accounts that a central bank has direct access to. Oh, do tell. If another pandemic happened, for example, the Fed could just deposit stimulus checks into every U.S. citizen's digital currency account, or it could turn off your account because you're not wearing a mask. Okay, but let's continue with the story. They say the last thing I want to touch on here is a digital currency could allow governments to track every transaction a person makes, no matter how minute. This level of transparency would be a powerful disincentive to those to using these currencies for crime and fraud. But it could also open the door to new kinds of social control. Yeah, it could. That it's a, you know, this is to me, this is the journal, this is the Fed speaking through the journal, saying, hey, we might roll this way or we might roll that way.
Right. They're trying to market. You're trying to soften the market, but let's just look. I want to posit two worlds. In one world, the players have sovereign immunity, can print money, and can track all the transactions on a database, which is not limited as a distributed ledger.
Yeah.
Right. Now, they can do that now. They can track all the money in the world. So the idea that they can't see where organized crime is moving its money.
That's silly.
What I told you what the retired DEA agent told a reporter I was working with. He said at lunch, he said, let's face it, honey, everything batches and moves through the New York Fed. They know where every penny is.
Yeah.
So that's been, they've known where every penny is for a long time. Okay. So the first world, we have sovereign immunity and we have a database that we can control and manipulate and
sovereign immunity means we issue the money and you can't sue us for anything.
Right. So we're above the law. We can above print, make money out of thin air, and we can do whatever we want with our data, and it's all private.
Yeah.
It's flexible and it's private. You, however, you are subject to all of our rules. You can't print money. You can, you know, to a certain extent, you can mine. You can create this crypto system.
You can borrow ours.
Yeah. But you have to keep everything on a distributed ledger. And we control your in and out. You can't go in and out of your currency without going through one of our banks that we control. So you need our money to go in. Our bank puts you in, takes you out. But you have to have a distributed ledger. You can't do anything creative with your databases.
Right. Yeah.
Now, I keep telling them there's a reason they call it crypto.
Yeah.
As in crypt. I mean,
that's a thumbs down for me, what you just said.
Right. I mean, the difference over here, I can play all I want on the Google and Amazon cloud. Over here, you are locked into a distributive ledger and we have a complete record of everything you've touched.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Let's keep it going. Let's turn to Farmageddon.
Yeah.
speaking of control. Okay, this is a big story that's worth spending some time on. This is from Children's Health Defense exclusive. WHO proposals could strip nations of their sovereignty, create worldwide totalitarian state, expert warns. The expert they're talking about is Francis Boyle, is a lawyer. He is a professor of international law at the University of Illinois. And we're talking about two different things here with the World Health Organization. One is proposed International Health Regulations Amendments, which I've highlighted here in green. And the other is the proposed pandemic treaty. They represent two separate but related sets of proposals that would fundamentally alter the WHO's ability to respond to public health emergencies throughout the world, and critics warn, significantly strip nations of their sovereignty. How do these two different things work? There's an intro on Boyle. He says the proposals, they contravene international law. They also contravene U.S. law. Boyle explained the difference between the latest pandemic treaty and IHR proposals, meaning the regulations. He says, quote, the WHO treaty would set up a separate international organization, whereas the proposed regulations would work within the context of the WHO we have today. He said, I've read through both of them. It's a distinction without a difference. Either one or both would set up a worldwide totalitarian medical and scientific police state under the control of Tedros and the WHO, which are basically a front organization for the CDC, Tony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, the biowarfare industry, and the Chinese Communist government that pays a good chunk of their bills. Either they'll get the regulations or they'll get the treaty, but both are essentially dangerous. These are truly dangerous, existentially dangerous, and insidious documents. I want to pause here and say, if you're going to take the poison of the treaty, it's got to pass as a treaty in the U.S. with two-thirds of the Senate vote. The question is, okay, so I get that. How do the regulations work? How are you going to sneak it? How are you going to do an end around the treaty with regulations?
Well, and he explains this. My understanding is this is a treaty. You can't just say these are amendments.
Well,
they rise to the level of a treaty, and so
I
the
agree
question
with
is, will Congress allow them to get away with this? This is really.
Well, the question is, how are you going to sneak it in? And I want to cut back to the story because Boyle there explains how they're going to try to avoid having this pass the Senate with a treaty. Okay, so let me just cut back to the story real quick. Okay. Boyle said the pandemic treaty would be unlike many other international agreements, that it would come into immediate effect. He says, if you read the treaty, it says quite clearly it would come into effect immediately upon signature. That violates the normal process of a treaty. Well, that's right. And that's probably why that's not going to work. But what about the regulations? Let's look at this. Whoever drafted that knew exactly what they were doing to bring it into force immediately upon signature. Assuming the WHO adopts the treaty in May, Biden can just order Fauci or whoever representative is there to sign the treaty, and it will immediately come into effect on a provisional basis. But the regulations are different. You know, so that route, though, the Senate still has to vote on it, right? It's still a treaty. You can't call it a treaty and not have a two-thirds vote in the Senate.
So I think, you know, it's not clear to me what they're going to try, but I think they're going to try to get the amendments adopted without a vote of anybody.
So
they're going to say
it's
just an amendment to an existing treaty and you don't have to get a vote. And that's why I'm saying, will the Senate and the Congress let them get away with it?
So let's go to the regulations they're talking about.
Right.
Because that to me, it's not clear. How are you going to end around with the regulations? But Boyle answers it in this article, and he says, according to Boyle, similarly to the pandemic treaty with respect to the regulations, he says, again, Biden can instruct his representative in May, assuming they adopt the regulations, they meaning the WHO. If the WHO adopts the regulations, Biden can instruct his representative to sign the regulations, and then the Biden administration will treat them as it would treat that as a binding international agreement, just like they did with the 2005 regulations, referring to the original IHR international health regulations ratified that year. Those 2005 regulations, he says, were signed, and the U.S. State Department at that time considered them to be a legally binding international executive agreement that they list in the official State Department publication Treaties in Force. In other words, they treat the 2005 regulations as if they were a treaty that never received the advice and consent of the United States Senate. So my money is now on they're going to backdoor it with the regulations.
Well, here's what's interesting. Let me bring it back to the Biden story, because it was the Biden administration that pushed doing this. I mean, it was the Biden administration that took this to the WHO and pushed it last year, and that's why we were in Geneva in May. And you spoke at the press conference through Zoom. So it is the U.S. that has been pushing this total control through the WHO and the ability to lock down the world in 192 countries through the WHO. Now, because it's Biden that's pushing it, now we have Biden and his administration under serious attack by this classification document scandal, whatever is going on. My question is, are the two connected? And does it relate to whether or not somebody wants you to turn sovereignty over to the WHO?
Another great question.
The United States will turn its sovereignty. What we haven't turned over to the central bank, we'll turn over to the WHO. And, you know, my theory is the bankers want to use the WHO to do, you know, to manage the economy in a way that nobody can see it's the bankers. So I think this is the central bankers.
Right. I agree with that.
Right.
But back to your earlier point, Biden, you know, probably do that anyway.
Yeah, no, yeah, Biden was eager to do it. So the question is this somebody wants to stop it? I don't know. When you have a country, when you have a nation undergoing a coup d'etat and giving away its sovereignty, you know, an effort to create an impeachable offense of the president is likely related, right?
Yeah, right now, there is obviously a power struggle at the top, and it's starting to remind me. Do you remember that there was a show called I, Claudius on PBS back in the day? This is like everybody's getting stabbed, or the Shakespeare play Titus Andronicus. Everybody's getting stabbed. It's like,
Is like the end of the Roman Empire.
Boy, the knives are out and just being, people are getting shit left, right, and center.
The Midianite thing.
Yeah.
Whatever is happening, it's called the Midianite thing. That's what's happening.
Boy.
Many knights are killing each other.
You got it. It's going on big time. Okay.
Right.
Anyway, but May, to finish off that story about the treaties and the regulations with the WHO, the key timeline here is May. That's when that big WHO. So we'll come back to that story in future episodes, no doubt about it. Okay. But for now, let's go to the next story in Farmageddon, which is again from the Defender. There's not a lot new here. The number one cause of death for under 65s in 2021 is sudden death. Like I said, there's not a lot new here for subscribers, but there is an interesting, I can't zoom in on these graphs. Look how tiny the labels are. So, this is the key thing. Stark difference in cancer deaths between jabbed and unjabbed. Steve Kerr summarizes the three most stunning differences between the jabbed and unjabbed. One, sudden death rates are off the charts for the vaccinated compared to the unvaccinated for those under 65. It's the number one cause of death in this age group. Two, myocarditis as a cause of death is registering now for both age ranges, but only for the vaccinated. And three, cardiac issues as a cause of death in vaccinated young people, being defined as under 65, are significantly elevated versus their unvaccinated peers. And he says, by the way, exploding cancer rates is precisely what you would expect from a drug that impairs and destroys your immune system, which is what the COVID-19 jabs do.
Right.
Very interesting.
Right.
Yeah, it's now, whatever, a year and a half after they've introduced the jab. When did they come out with these things? December 2020, right?
Yeah, December 2020 was when the vaccination started.
So it's 2 years later.
Ed Dow just came out and said his understanding is the White House is going to take the position that all these sudden deaths are caused by long COVID and climate change. So here we go again.
Yeah, here we go. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, That was that's interesting. That 2 years later now, I think we can expect to see more of these as more time goes by. Because remember, there were no human clinical trials on any of this stuff.
Right.
Right. So we are the clinical trial, and we're going to see right. how these trials are turning out. We're seeing them in real time. Not so well.
Well, if the deaths continue, you know, their polycrisis is once you've destroyed your brand, you can't get it back.
Yeah.
That's their polycrisis. And if you've destroyed your brand, the only way you can control then is with force. And that's what the WHO treaty is about, is getting the force right. you need for complete control.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's the force bridge to get you to CBDC.
It's a stopgap until they can implement CBDC, right. which is not, you know, going to be 2023, I can tell you that.
Right.
Right. Okay. Let's keep it going.
Well, can I just stop and say one thing?
Yeah.
If we don't know what happened, but if somebody can do that to the FAA systems, you know, if Mr. Global has the capacity to move in and take over all systems or most systems, you know, there is another way to control.
Yeah.
Right.
That's an outstanding point.
Right.
What happened with that FAA story?
Well, but I think Mr. Global can, you know, if they're willing to move that way, they can, you know, if you think of Mr. Global as basically Spectre.
Yeah.
And they can do that to the FAA. They can do that to almost everybody else, you know, and the fast move, if they can't get the 190 sovereign nations doing what they want fast enough, they can just do an FAA, including on the central banks.
Yeah. Right. Right. I'm with you. I think the central bankers ultimately, I mean, they're the top of the pyramid. They're at the top of the crime pyramid, period.
Right. But whoever is at the top is the guy who's got the biggest physical gun, you know, and if you can hack the FAA, that's a big physical gun. Cause you're probably talking about Lockheed there.
Could be.
That's the guy who runs the satellites. Right.
Yeah. But Lockheed, you know, they're not doing anything without the blessing of the
central bankers.
Oh,
of course.
Yeah, right.
But I'm just saying, if you can hack that, you can hack a lot.
Yeah, right. Right. I don't doubt their hacking capability, you know, right. at all for a second. Okay, let's turn to the last story in Farmageddon. This is a story at first I thought this is really a story, and then I was like, man, let me read that again. From Newspunch, Switzerland to provide patients with safe blood transfusion from unvaccinated purebloods. Oh, that sounds good. The founder of this service noted his main goal is not to run. So the idea is that, you know, you need a blood transfusion, you're unvaccinated, and you don't want vaccinated blood being injected into your veins. You know, I wouldn't right. want that. Would you? No. I don't want MR. You know, I don't want it in there. So you set up a separate blood bank, right? That's not really what this is. Let's go back to the story.
It's the correspondent. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's information. It's not blood. The founder of this service further noted that his main goal is not to run a safe blood donation as a blood bank, noting that this is not possible at the moment due to legal concerns, but to act as a quick referral service where we maintain a list of names, of course, to match blood donors and recipients who were then sent to a medical partner's clinic where the safe unvaccinated blood transfusion will be handled. In return for providing people with this service, members are also urged to make themselves available as blood donors to provide their names, in other words, for other people looking for unvaccinated blood transfusions. There is no blood bank with mRNA-free blood yet, but Safe Blood Donations declared that we will not give up until we can offer a worldwide network of such clinics. You know, that's it. You know, blood, right. the standard blood donation is you go to the clinic, they suck some blood out of your arm, and you leave, and that's it. You know?
Right. It's a clean blood co-op.
Yeah.
Right.
This is not that. This is like they expressly said, a referral service, like your name is sitting in a database somewhere.
Well, you're it's a member, you know, it's a member group. It's a self-help member group. You want clean blood, so you're signing up and you're willing to give clean blood so that you can get clean blood.
Yeah, I'm just saying I'd think twice before participating in that.
Well, what I would do is I would want to do it in a way where I checked.
I mean, if you need the blood,
the blood got checked before.
You got to do everything you can to get unvaccinated blood.
Right.
But as a participant in that, I'd be hesitant to show up as like, hey,
I think
I'm here,
what most
Mr.
people
Helper,
are doing is they're arranging it through close friends and family.
Right.
So they know the person who's donating and they trust them.
Yeah.
Right.
But we saw that story a couple of weeks ago, and maybe a month ago, where the hospitals refused. They got the wrong blood.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go. Let's cut to the pushback. Are you ready?
Yep.
This is good. BlackRock again. Okay. BlackRock subpoenaed by Texas Senate panel over ESG issues. A Texas Senate committee issued BlackRock a subpoena requesting specific documents related to the world's largest money manager's environmental, social, and governance practices for its executives to testify. So give us documents and give us witnesses. The Committee on State Affairs asked BlackRock last month to produce documents that will help legislators discuss what impacts ESG policies may have on Texans' retirement savings. In August, the committee sent letters to four firms, BlackRock. This is interesting. The committee sent letters to four firms, BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, and Institutional Shareholder Services, asking for documents. The Texas legislator says each firm produced documents, but that BlackRock withheld some information. So BlackRock refused basically to comply, and now they're getting subpoenaed. How about
that? So I've been trying to watch, you know, the hearings were taped, 6 hours, and I've been trying to watch them sort of sporadically because it's going to take me a while to go through. And the reason why is someone I completely trust said it was fabulous, that they absolutely caught BlackRock and State Street lying, and they nailed them right, you know, in the middle of the testimony, and that it's glorious to watch. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm going to try and find it. The one that was my favorite, I told you at the first, within 18 minutes during the opening, one of the legislators points out, and I don't know if it was on State Street, BlackRock, who it was, but the governance ranking for FTX was higher and stronger than the governance ranking for ExxonMobil. FTX had like two guys on the board. I mean,
yeah, right.
Okay,
right.
But the other one is they had an oil and gas guy testifying, and he had been going through a negotiation with two different banks trying to get a big financing. And one of them was with Credit Suisse, and he had done almost, I think, $1 billion of financings with Credit Suisse over the years. This is a real relationship. He gets to the investment committee. They turn down the loan, and the banker who's trying to help get it through the investment committee assures him that if he will tweet out a tweet on his personal Twitter feed saying that he's on board and supports the Paris Agreement, that he thinks he can get him the loan. No, you have to watch it. You have to watch it. And this guy basically describes at one point the fact that fossil fuel has lifted billions of people out of poverty. it gives you a real insight into how nuts this is. So
yeah,
I haven't gone through the whole thing, but I hope at some point to come back with clips for you because, you know,
I'd love to see them.
The reality the reality is working its way through the trance, and the trance is having trouble. Trance is struggling.
It's still in place, though, for sure. The pandemic has opened just clown world. Just like make up a story. It doesn't matter how ridiculous it is.
Right.
And just repeat it a whole bunch of times and have serious scientists come on and swear by it. No matter how absurd the story is, you'll get serious people who will get behind it. Unbelievable.
Yep.
Okay. Last story in pushback. This is a shorty but a goodie. NFL lineman suggests COVID vaccines to blame after college basketball player collapses. The player they're talking about is Old Dominion. We saw that clip,
right?
I believe last week. And we're not the only ones who saw it. Apparently an NFL lineman saw it. And in a tweet replying to the video footage of the incident, NFL player DeMarcus Walker said, "It's got to be these vaccines." Walker is a veteran lineman for the Tennessee Titans. And that's a
More
big deal.
More good things coming from Tennessee. What can I tell you?
Yeah, that's a
that's
big
a brave
deal.
Man. That is it's, a brave man.
the NFL has, it's, you know, there's a reason Roger Goodell is getting paid $63 million a year. The NFL reaches a lot of people. It is a major propaganda organ. And for a player to come out, and it's a major propaganda organ because it's reaching probably 100 million people. For a lineman, anybody on the NFL to tweet something, they're reaching a lot of people.
So one person I know who's a propaganda expert says that the greatest sort of mind control programming events are the Super Bowl and the big sports games and the beauty pageants.
Really?
Right. So what we're watching So what we're watching, the sports is the biggest by far. But when you see the way both the sports and the beauty pageants are breaking down, you know, because you keep going to more and more extreme, but it's not working. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So.
Right. It's not working. Look at Miss USA.
reality knocks.
Okay. All right. Let's go to charts. You ready?
Okay. Not a lot That's today.
It. Yeah. Not a lot, but some good ones. Okay. Life insurance.
Yeah. I just wanted to look, you know, because we're tracking the rise of all-cause mortality and what it's doing in the financial system. So I just wanted to take a look at what the largest life insurance in terms of market capitalization are. And as you can imagine, a lot of the big ones are Chinese.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, because that's where you got the population.
Yeah.
But here you go. You can just go down through the big ones. And at the bottom, you know, you've got Prudential. Anyway, these will be in our notes. You can see it. But if you want to track what's happening in the life insurance industry, this will help you do it. So we'll have it in the notes.
Yeah, the first U.S. one comes as MetLife at number 7 and then AIG at number 9.
Right. Well, AIG is in there in two ways because Chubb, you know, I'll have to look at this. Chubb bought a piece of that. So you have some of the old AIG, I think, in Chubb as well. I'll have to look at that. But anyway, so tracking what happens to the life insurance companies is going to tell us, you know, more than a little bit about what's going on.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Let's keep it going. Next chart we've got.
Yeah. So I just wanted the markets are really up a lot in the last 3 months. So I just wanted to take a 3 month look at some of the markets. So this is silver, gold, and AGG, which is one of the, it's called the bond aggregate ETF. And so, you know, there's no doubt about it. The safety trade is looking a lot better with silver up 27% in 3 months, gold up 14%, and AGG up a little bit more than 4.5%. And it's funny because all last year I kept telling you silver is going down. I'm buying more.
Yeah, you're right.
So I may have to pause.
We actually looked at this chart last week, the same 3 month chart. And I can tell you because I just did this chart last night, that all three of these are up. I mean, AGG is up a little bit, but silver is significantly up. Now, that's a week,
gold.
So.
Right.
And gold, but silver's way up. Right. Boom. You know, it's coming out of the gate strong.
Well, the silver-gold ratio, I mean, that's why I kept buying silver, because it's historically so high. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, right.
Anyway.
Right.
So, you know, silver's been underpriced for a long time and continues to be.
I mean, if you read monetary history, you know that like the historical silver to gold ratio is between like 10 to it's 16 and 10.
1 to 15. 1 to 15.
Yeah, yeah. 15.
The number. Right,
right, right. Yeah.
1 to 15. So when it hits 100, I'm a buyer. I don't care what's happening.
That's a good point. That's a good value play. I like that a lot. Yeah. Okay, let's keep it going. Next chart we got S&P. FXI,
yeah, so these are just the equity markets, again, 3 months. So the S&P now in the black, up 8%, and Europe and the China way outperforming the U.S. So, you know, all the fear talk of what was going to happen to China and Europe has come off a lot, especially because the winter's been warmer. But VGK, the European ETF, up almost 26%, and FXI, large caps China, up 26%. So equity market's doing well. And of course, the question is equity doing well or is just the dollar falling?
Yeah, right.
That's, you know, so you have an arbitrage between currency and real assets, so to speak.
Yeah.
So.
And I think that is it for charts, is it not?
No, I think we had one more. We had a one-year chart.
Oh, yeah, right. You're right. You're right. We have the one-year chart.
Yeah, so I just wanted to take a look at the equity markets with a one-year chart. So as you can see, still, you know, we're still negative in the S&P and large caps.
Right.
Anyway, so, but you just, if you look at that one-year chart and see the improvement in the last 3 months since November.
It's big.
Yeah. Right. I can't tell you how many people I know were saying, well, maybe I should get out in November. That's what you never want to do. You never want to get out in November. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's really since the very end of October would have been the bottom, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking it was FTX, but FTX is after that. It's November 11th. Yep. Yeah. Anyway, but that's it for charts. Interesting.
Okay. CBDC? So you ready? Yep.
Yeah, so let's cut to that. That's a good, okay, so let's go to hero. Oh, there's no hero this week, but previous wrap-up and connections. So let's start with I Want to Stop CBDCs. This is great.
I Want to Stop CBDCs. So I was supposed to do an interview on CBDCs on Friday, and I was sitting at the hairdresser thinking, okay, now, because the hairdresser has no interest in the financial system, this particular hairdresser, I thought, how would I explain to her why she needs to stop CBDC and what she could do? Yeah. So we had a great conversation, but I decided I would write it up. And it's called, I Want to Stop CBDCs, What Can I Do? And there's so many things that everybody can do, and it really, really matters. And these are things you can do that don't necessarily take a lot of work. And in fact, if you do them, you can improve, you know, the quality of your resiliency, et cetera. Anyway, so that's up at the website, I Want to Stop CBDCs, What Can I Do? And it has one of our favorite cartoons that Jeremy Nell made. A woman's checking out at the grocery store, and the cashier says, sir, how would you like to pay, cash or slavery?
That's great.
You know, and that's a play on, oh, you really think it's convenient? I don't think so.
Right.
Anyway.
I love Jeremy. He's great.
He is great.
Okay. Next up. This is good. This is a helpful
this
guide.
This is very good. So there are a frightening number of states and schools that are taking the position that they can do things with minors without parental consent. And so I keep trying to bring forward information and tools that will help parents make sure that that's not happening to their kids. And this is related to medical care. We talked last week about surveys. Anyway, but this is a form and disclosure on the different state laws. So you need to understand what the rules are in your state, and you need to make sure, you know, things aren't happening to your kids without your permission.
Yeah. So it's a state-by-state guide, which I love these guides.
Right. I do too.
Very helpful. Okay, let's keep it going.
Jurisdiction matters.
It does. Sure, you got that right. It does in the U.S. Okay, next up, where is my period?
Right, so two wonderful French women, a cabinet maker and an attorney, have put together an incredible effort. It's that we did a Salary Report interviewing both of them. It's called Where Is My Period? And it's about all the women who've had serious trouble with their, you know, just all their female parts and their menstrual cycle as a result of the injection. And now they're making a documentary called Where Is My Period? The trailer's out, and this is an initiative we're supporting. We've donated money. There's a link where you can donate money to the making of the documentary, and it's really, really good. And one of the reasons it's so wonderful, or you'd listen to the Salary Report, is what happened initially when this started to happen, John, is women were afraid to talk about it.
Yeah.
And a lot happened in the medical system to repress it or make them think they couldn't talk about it or to shame them or embarrass them. And Melody, who is the leader of this, who started it, she's the cabinet maker from, she lives outside of Paris. She's the most extroverted, warm, buoyant, you know, just this wonderful French woman, you know. And she's like, what's going on? Where's my period? Let's talk about this, you know.
Yeah.
And she makes it fun. She makes it interesting. She makes it, you know, she never seems to lose her state of amusement. She's pretty good about it. And she gets everybody out of shame and into talking about it. And it's the healthiest thing in the world. And the sort of information sharing that, is that these two have gotten going is just – Anyway, so I find this in terms of the pushback against what's happening with the mass atrocity. This, to me, is one of the most positive efforts and one really worth supporting. So check this out at Solari, because you can get a link to their website. You can get a link to the film company that's making the documentary. This is going to be a great documentary.
Yeah. You know, the thing I like about it is that how jarring that title is. You know, I'm a man. I see that, like, where's my period? Whoa, what the? And it's like, you know, it's like so in your face. And but
yeah, it's
it
very in your
home.
Face.
Like, this is a very serious issue.
It's a very serious issue, because infertility is, you know, the end of the human race. That's number one. But the other thing is that the way that Melanie and Diane Protas, the attorney, the way they handle it, they are so charming. They are so interesting. They are so intelligent. They are so people you want to be connected with, that they draw you into this thing in a way. They're in your face, but they're making you laugh, and you know, they just make you want to help them. It's great.
Yeah. Have they cut a trailer yet?
Yeah, that's the trailer. The commentary is the announcement of the trailer. So just go watch the trailer at, you know, it's at Solari, but you can also link to their website and to the film company.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. The trailer's key, you know, got to have a good trailer.
I love these two. I think they're fabulous. This is a great interview on the Solari Report. We made it public so you can send it everywhere. But we made a donation, and I really encourage, this is a documentary that can really make a big difference.
Yeah, you know, I'll look at the trailer. Maybe we'll run the trailer. If it's short, you know, the trailer.
Yeah.
It's like a 3-minute trailer doesn't, it's got to be punchy.
But I'm sure you can take a cut. I don't know. See if there's a cut you want to take for next week.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Let's wrap it up with annual
wrap-up. So we had part two with Dr. Farrell published on Tuesdays. You know, we're publishing the weekly interview now on Tuesdays. And so that publishes that week. The first part one, we talked about the top 20 stories in Bizarro World. In part two, we talked, we're talking about, okay, what do those stories mean to you in your life? And we go through the Building Wealth curriculum. We also talk a little bit about unanswered questions and take action. And the next one coming up on the 31st, Elsa von Hamlin is doing pharma food, which is the big theme. And this is a look at synthetic food, particularly lab-grown meat. And, you know, I keep hearing in my head, just when you thought it was safe to go in the water, here comes the next shark. So this is something.
Lab-grown meat. That's just so gross.
You will not. Okay, so this is hard to read as a human being. And it's hard to read as an investment banker, because if you look at the waste of money that's happening, you know, you are pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into something that not only is it not economic, it will never be economic.
Yeah.
So if you think it's bad as a human or bad as a financial person, when you see the absurdity of the engineering, there are some engineering stories in the, I can't wait to see your face. So I'll say no more.
I mean,
I'm not above
just going, that is so gross. I can't, like, I can't do it.
Okay, so it comes that we'll publish it on the web on the 31st, and then after that we'll do the fourth part, the equity overview. But this wrap up is something, and of course the Pete Kennedy and some of our team are writing things about how to find your local farmer and other resources, because after you read this, if you are not serious about building a local fresh food system, I mean, that's what I said. I said in Knoxville, I don't know if you heard it, I said, don't finance your local farmer because you want to make money. Finance your local farmer because you don't want to eat bugs. That's
it.
Yeah,
right.
Right. Okay. Right.
I've got a, I'll set a cartoon next week of, it's a great one called the Bug Mac. Called the Bug Mac. Like McDonald's version of.
Oh, no.
It's so gross. It's like, oh.
Well, you anyway, know, the first time it. I ran into it, I was driving across Canada from Nova Scotia to, you know, upper Michigan, and all the fast food places all of a sudden had Beyond Meat burgers and sausages, and I'm looking at it like, and nobody's touching it. No one would touch it, but it was, all of a sudden it was everywhere, and no one wanted it.
Okay.
Just complete dud. Anyway, okay, that's it for this week, right?
Yeah, that's it. We got it all covered.
But anyway, I want to bring up the theme again because it was a great description. 23 large.
Yep. Control hangouts. Grids and limited control grids and limited hangouts. 23 right. large.
Right. And you know, that is not going away by March.
It's I was going to say it's early.
It's early. Okay, well, this was a great great money in markets. I'm shaking my head about the world. We have plenty of questions. If you have ideas on any of these stories, please send them in because the unanswered questions are growing. And so, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Money Markets. I'll see you next week, John.
Next week or 2 weeks?
Isn't it next week? Mm-hmm. No, is next. Are we off next week?
Hold on. Please hold. Yeah, we're off because next Thursday, the 26th is Thursday. That's the last Thursday.
That's right. So we're off next week.
Yeah.
So do you know how many stories we're going to have 2 weeks from now?
I've already got a stack in my, I have a folder for Catherine's, you know, stories.
Thank God it's all going to a folder. So
I can have a fortnight is too much. It's going to be way too much. Okay. Well, big spreadsheet we'll coming.
We just, I don't know if I ever told you this story. Polly wanted to know, Polly Tommy said, why can't you do a financial rebellion on the last week of the month? I said, I never record on the last week of the month. She said, why not? I said, I need a week to think. She said, why?
Yeah, right. You need time.
Yeah.
That's how my videos are. Like I told you yesterday, I've been takes a while for my muses to show up. Now I got a good video that I'll work on over the next 2 weeks. It's going to be good. It's going to be really good.
So we get to see it in February, you think?
No, I want to have it turned out before the next Money Markets.
Oh, wow. You know,
it's got to, yeah. Okay. It's a good one. Okay.
Okay.
All right. All
right. Okay, John, have a great 2 weeks and I'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
See you 2 weeks.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Money and Markets and the Slayer Report.